You're listening to the Plain Label Podcast, and on this episode, we continue our theme of comebacks. Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of volume 2 of the Plain Label Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Williams, and along with me is my good friend and co-host, Mrs. Rachel Zelag.
Hi, that's me.
In this episode, we are continuing our discussion of comebacks with a look at Kathryn Bigelow's film, The Hurt Locker, and Robert Downey Jr. in 2008, specifically, we're going to talk about Sherlock Holmes. Before getting into our discussion, we would like to mention that we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. Alrighty, Mrs. Zelag, I have a little joke that I actually told you about before we started recording. But what sort of flavored water are you having over there with finishing up your whole 30?
Oh, it's the best kind of flavored water. It's called fridge water.
Ew, through all of those dirty hoses in the fridge?
Straight up from the filter.
Yuck, yuck, yuck. So the water, you're in your last week.
I had a dream last night that I got drunk and ate pizza. I don't know what that means about me as a person, but that's what I did.
I see. What is it? What are you going to look forward to having beverage wise once you're done with your goal here?
I'm going to pull a Rachel and take that lime LaCroix and just add a little Tito's to it. Put a little lime in there. It's going to be wonderful.
Have I told you about what Tito's does to me?
Makes you slappy?
No. Oh. Well, yes, but it makes my knuckles hurt.
That's weird.
Yeah. It, like, makes my knuckles in my hands, like, feel like I have arthritis in them or something.
Weird.
Yeah.
That's really weird. It's
the only kind of vodka that does that.
That means it's working.
Yeah, really. That's the only one that works right, apparently.
There's also a new Moscow Mule bar in town that I'm pretty excited to go to after this, too.
So. Yeah, you know, I have heard word from that from the wife and my little sister, actually.
So, all right. Yeah. Make a plan.
I don't know. I am having a tall cup of coffee, but it does have a little
made
bit.
Made it Irish.
It does have some Baileys in it, and it does have some vodka in it.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tall cup, so don't get too excited.
Just get a little. really think I'm judging you.
So anyway. That's what I'm having. It's, it's kind of how Sunday mornings work around here. Especially when you have to go run soon.
Yeah, so. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I'd have to be drunk to run.
Well, I believe you. I do believe you. All right, so we're going to go with my pick first. It is from 2008. It is directed by Kathryn Bigelow, and it is called The Hurt Locker.
Welcome to Camp Victory.
Oh, Camp Victory. This was Camp Liberty.
Oh, no, they changed that about a week ago. Victory sound better.
All right.
So what do you got?
The car has been parked illegally. The suspension is sagging. There's definitely something heavy in the trunk.
Interesting.
What's he doing?
I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die comfortable.
How many bombs have you disarmed?
873.
873? You're a wild man, you know that?
Well, that was too bad. Our first time working together. What do you think?
I think us working together means I talk to you and you talk to me.
You going on a date, Sanborn?
A team leader is inspiring. He's gonna get me killed.
What's the best way to go about disarming one of these things?
The way you don't die, sir. Good.
What do we have here?
This box is full of stuff. It almost killed me.
What about this one? Where's this one from, Will?
It's my wedding ring. Like I said, stuff that almost killed me.
Put down the phone!
Brandon Aldridge!
I can't get a shot!
I was scared.
Yeah? Well, everyone's a coward about something.
We're going on a mission. And my job is to keep you safe so we can keep going on mission.
It's combat, buddy.
Go!
Everybody get back!
Go!
You realize dies every time you suit up. It's life or death.
Found something.
You roll the dice. And you deal with it.
An intense portrayal of elite soldiers who have one of the most dangerous jobs in the world, disarming bombs in the heat of combat. When a new Sergeant James takes over a highly trained bomb disposal team amidst violent conflict, he surprises his two subordinates, Sanborn and Eldridge, by recklessly plunging them into a deadly game of urban combat, behaving as if he's indifferent to death. As the men struggle to control their wild new leader, the city explodes into chaos, and James' true character reveals itself in a way that will change each man forever.
That was good.
Got a little intense there.
That was intense. So this was directed by Kathryn Bigelow. This is the director we're talking about. She is of Zero Dark 30 fame as well. Were you familiar with her? Is that a name that you know before this
Honestly,
movie came out?
The first time that I saw, like, she was on my radar was when she won for this movie.
Uh-huh.
And kind of it was like a little F you to her ex-husband.
Yes, because right? because her and James Cameron were both up for Best Picture and Best Director.
And she won, and I thought that was really funny. So that was basically the first time I'd ever heard of her. I'm not the director person, you know, that's you. So.
Right. So before this, she had done a whole lot of not much for many years. At the beginning of her career, she did a vampire film called Near Dark, which is not bad.
Okay.
She directed the original version of Point Break.
Aha. Uh-huh.
With the Swayze and Keanu. And she did Strange Days, which is a futuristic kind of sci-fi deal in the mid-90s. And then she kind of didn't do a whole lot. She directed a few TV episodes. And her latest film before this one was K-19 The Widowmaker, which was not great. Like, I didn't really enjoy that much. So,
right.
So she went from 95 up until this movie with making two movies. So there was quite a 13-year gap there, really.
You gotta give her props for her movie choices, though.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, she's not directing rom-coms. She's like, let's get some gritty shit in here.
Yeah, really. So she kind of makes this big comeback and... You know, she's kind of grown up, I guess, as a filmmaker, because I wouldn't say that Point Break or Near Dark are really sophisticated films, or they're not trying
sure.
to do much of anything, you know?
Right.
They're just kind of pretty popcorn-style movie.
Action-y,
yeah. And so,
stick around.
Right, and so I knew, I recognized the name, but I didn't really know who she was either at the time when this came out. And this does have the distinction of being the best picture winner that made the least amount of money. So not a ton. That made the least amount, yeah.
Okay.
So it wasn't really that widely seen, I guess, is another way of saying it.
Yeah.
And after watching the film, I know why it's not that widely seen, or it wasn't at the time, right? But before I get into my thoughts about it, what did you think of this movie?
I get it. To sum it up, I guess I'm a very hot and cold on war movies. Because I've never been in a war or around a war really. And I thought it was good. Like the character portrayals, I thought that James was fairly psychotic in his own right. But I wasn't, like, on the edge of my seat. By the end of the movie, I was like, all right.
And this was a first watch for you?
No, I had seen this before. But,
okay.
I mean, not to the point that I remembered what happened. I knew that he was, like, a little bit crazy eyes. And I remember the fight. But, like, that was really it. And we watched it, like, we do the thing where, like, well, shit, this won awards. We better go see it. So I must have seen it around 2009, I'm assuming.
Uh-huh.
And so... I don't really remember a lot from it then, and I don't know, it wasn't really like super memorable for me this time either.
Interesting. When I first saw this, I didn't really know much about it, and I think it was the same sort of thing that you just described where it won a lot of awards, so I was like, oh, I should probably see that. And it starts off, and you know, I didn't know who Jeremy Renner was at the time.
Right, me neither, yeah.
And so when it starts off and it has Guy Pearce, I was like, oh, Guy Pearce is the main guy? Okay, cool. I know who that is. Rachel obviously knows who that is. And he comes up, and spoilers, you know, he gets blown up like really soon into the film.
Yeah, like the first 10 minutes.
And I wrote down this time, it's like the Scream effect, right? Where you put someone famous at the beginning of your movie, like Scream.
Right.
And you have them killed. And then for me, anyway, it was like, oh, shit. It was kind of gave me the sense that no one was safe.
Right. I likened it to Game of Thrones for those people who have seen Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we still haven't watched that.
Because you're like, oh, that person can't die. They're super famous. And you're like, oh, yeah, no, everyone dies. Everyone.
It makes me wonder when I finally get around to it, now that I'll have that knowledge that everyone's going to die at some point. If
just
I'll
don't fall
appreciate
in love with
it.
Anyone.
Yeah.
You will. You'll still be super shocked by what happened.
I don't know. I doubt it. I'm just going to sit there all arms crossed. And
I already know things about this because I'm way behind on life and culture.
That's true. That is true. So what having Guy Pearce at the beginning of the film did for me was it kind of made me more on the edge of my seat because I didn't know what was going to happen next. And it felt less formulaic than films typically do.
Sure. I agree with that.
And some of the things that I thought were interesting about the film is that there were touches. And I guess before I get into that, I should say that I'm on the same page as you when it comes to war films in general, to where I understand the point of them, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I enjoy them a lot of the time. Because I'm
right,
like,
depending on what it is.
Yeah, I'm like, oh God, I get it. This is terrible. We shouldn't be doing that. You know, it's like that sort of, it feels like it's teaching a lesson to me all the time.
Right.
In a lot of films. So,
or just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Displaying the horrors, like it, and a lot of them are, like, just to like, quick aside, like, there are some, like Saving Private Ryan was like super gory and it had like all of the, what I call the horrors of war, where when you're doing a war movie, you want to capture like that horrible shit, or like Hacksaw Ridge. But like for me, I mean, that's just, and it's with any movie, there needs to be some sort of plot behind it. Like something that the plot needs to help me along, too. It can't just be a documentary on how horrible war is. So I think that's where I got lost a little bit.
Oh, okay. Some of the things that I liked toward the beginning of this was when Anthony Mackie comes out and Guy Pearce has died and they go into the spot where all of the bodies are held and it's all these like cardboard box looking, deals. And I'm like, oh my God, like it was little visuals like that that I was struck by.
Yeah.
Because it's like this weird mix of reverence for the dead and like the reality of what supplies they have, you know? It's like, well, we're going to try to make this look nice, but it's a bunch of cardboard is what it looks like.
Or like, yeah. And like what I took out of it was like the amount, I think this is what you're saying, like the resources they have, like we can't literally have a wood coffin for every soldier that's fallen because we just don't have enough of that.
Yeah. We don't have enough. We don't have the time. We don't have, the resources for that. So that was striking. And then what I thought was really important, and I think it only happens twice, but it's the special effects where Bigelow decides to slow down either an explosion or one of the sequences I'm thinking of later is when Anthony Mackie is using that high-powered rifle.
Yeah.
And you have the shell that's flipping and it's kind of spinning around. I thought that was something that had to be impressive and sort of new because a lot of this, it's like, okay, it's a war movie. I've seen war movies. you're going to have right. certain types. But I was like, oh, that's visually something different and interesting. And so I thought that those little techniques where whether it was the bomb that was going off and all of the little pebbles lift up off the ground or what have you, I thought that those were
That was cool.
Yeah, I thought that those were interesting touches as opposed to just like some special effects guy rigging something to blow up. You know?
Yeah.
So I like little bits like that. I thought that once we had Jeremy Renner's character brought in, watching it now, I'm thinking, oh man, this is like such a brother to the guy from the town. Because I was like, he's just this guy. Like, I should
that
just...
That I don't care attitude.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather, like, die than, like, either admit that I'm wrong or go back on something. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's just the sort of just thick-skulled type of a guy.
Yep. Yep. And, super stubborn. And...
Oh, yeah. And he's such a just... when we're first introduced to him, I should say, he's just such a guy, right? Like, he's a dude.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And he's just the sort of... I'm just like, you are not someone I could ever talk to, is what I think of when I see this character.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
And go ahead.
And he, like, tries to... I mean, even with, like, that scenario with that little kid, like, you could tell that he was having, like... emotions about that, but God forbid that, like, anybody else knows.
Yeah, now that was the part where he started to grow on me a little bit, because at first I'm just like, God, what an asshole. Like, what an irresponsible guy. And he always sort of teetered between he's the likable, like, I don't give a shit type of a guy, and for me, he's the irresponsible dick. Like, he just kind of jumped between those two things.
Yeah.
But once we have the little kid that's selling him the CD and he's developing the relationship. And then it does speak to sort of the white male ignorance when he can't tell if that's the kid that's dead or not. Right. Because it's like, oh, all of the little brown kids look the same or what?
Right.
You know, it's like, wait a minute. Like, I get that you see a lot of little kids and stuff, but you seriously can't tell? Like, I didn't think his face was all blown up or anything. But anyway, so that kind of struck me as strange. But once, you know, he goes in and he thinks that it's this kid that he's developed a relationship with, and he's got this body bomb, and they have that kind of horrifying scene where he's going to blow him up, and then he's not going to blow him up. That at least gave some humanity to me, because up until that point, we hadn't really seen him having any issues.
Right.
And he was just kind of this, like, cold and calculated type of a person, it seemed like.
I mean, I wouldn't even call him cold and calculated. I think he was, like, really, what did I write? I'm not sure Bomb Squad is a time to be ballsy, is what I put. Like, I felt like he thought of himself as some sort of Bomb Squad maverick, like, I'm just gonna go here, and I know there are protocols, and I know there are ways that other people would do it, but fuck all those rules, I'm gonna do what I wanna do. And he knows, obviously, that he's putting other people on edge, like everybody in his team, but he doesn't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's the part that made me really not enjoy him, is, like, you know that there's someone screaming in your ear, like, and he didn't even give him any heads up. He wasn't like, by the way, just so you know, I do things a little bit differently. Uh-huh. You know, like, it wasn't a team player thing. It was just like, and I think one of the, I mean, especially I'm assuming in the Bomb Squad, like, one of the big things that you want to do is, like, be a cohesive team when mm-hmm. you're, you know, doing that. But, like, just that cavalier attitude that, like, nobody else matters but, like, what I'm doing really just pissed me off.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. And I've been listening to, as of recording, I've been listening to season 2 of Serial, where they've been talking about Bo Bergdahl and his leaving his unit and all of that sort of stuff. And along with watching this film, I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, we got some really interesting dudes doing kind of whatever they want at times, it seems like, right? And it's interesting to me because in that season 2 of Serial, the guy that is talking to Bo Bergdahl is Mark Boll, who was the writer of this film and of Zero Dark Thirty.
That's really interesting.
And so it's that same sort of mentality. Like, this screenwriter's been able to, you know, sort of tap into what he sees as the reality of that situation.
Yeah.
And so I think that that makes it an interesting look at what's going on over there. And I think part of the problem and part of the reason that this is so acclaimed is that it's not a real pretty picture. It's not like, you know, we don't have your Captain Americas over there doing everything exactly by the book all of the time.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, they're people. They're just human people.
Right, and there's no, like, you know, it's not glorified like how we think of a Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan or something, to where we have that distance. So right. We can be like, oh, everything was great, and he was a good person, and he was, you know, he's trying to keep his group together, blah, blah, blah. Here, it's like so much every man for themselves, and it's like we do things the way that we want to instead of the way that we're instructed to. And it seems like with the more modern war films, it's more individualistic instead of here's our
goal.
All
for one and one for all.
Exactly, yeah. And so I don't know. I don't know if that's just a cultural thing or if it's a distance thing or whatever, but I think that that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, anytime anyone has a different way of doing things or a difference of opinion, it's obviously going to upset the status quo, I guess. And I don't know what the instances of people, like, of how many people in the military are like this guy, The ones that are like, fuck everything. Because I feel like after a while, people would be like, cool, like, I wouldn't feel safe with this guy on my team, but I don't know.
Yeah, and it's weird because, you know, using that real-life example again, it's like, if you complain to your superiors, are they going to listen to you, or are they going to tell you to shut up? You know, are they actually wanting to hear your complaints or not, or are they just going to tell you to deal with it?
Are you concerned? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, look, we got a mission to accomplish. I don't give a shit who you're with. Go do what you're supposed to do. And you just have all of these little individuals instead of a group, it seems like.
Yeah, it's so, an interesting take on that.
Yeah, one of the other things that I thought was interesting is you never really had the moment whenever I think of a bomb or a bomb movie or anything like that, it always seems like, oh man, if only I could figure this out in time. And hopefully I don't cut the wrong wire and all of that. It's like he's going in there and just like snip,
or drive
snip,
under
snip.
60.
Yeah, right. He's going in there and just like snipping off all of these just random wires, it seemed like. And especially when he's first introduced and he has the whole like the web of the bombs that he pulls up. And there's like six of them all around him. And he's just like snip, 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 snip. And he's like, okay, now we're good. And I'm like, wait a minute, what the fuck? Like,
my take on that was, first of all, like, he has diffused so many of these that he can tell what they are right away, so he doesn't need to be like, okay. Because in those bomb movies, normally, you don't have a bomb expert, like, you know, diffusing a bomb. It's like somebody with an earpiece that doesn't know what they're doing.
And he's being talked through it.
Right, yeah. So this guy, I mean, he's obviously an expert. He knows what he's doing. And secondly, I think the intricacy of the bombs is a little more base because of, like, how they're made. You know what I mean? Like, just, like, pull shit together from I don't know where and make a bomb. So, obviously I'm not a bomb expert, so I don't know that for sure. But it seems like maybe, you know, if you watch any Steven Seagal movie, it's, like, not that hard to make a bomb. So they don't necessarily need to be, like, that high tech, I guess.
So you're telling me it's not like Speed is what we're getting around to.
Right, yeah, it's like Under Siege, where you can put three chemicals together and put it in the microwave.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. What do you think about when he, getting sort of toward the end here, what do you think about when he gets to the real world?
It's like one of the more depressing scenes I've ever seen in my life. It's just really sad.
Yeah, it is really sad. It's one of those where I'm glad that it was in there. I'm glad that it wasn't just him heading home and that's the end of the movie.
Totally agree.
And it's that little bit where it's like, no, he's in the supermarket and he doesn't know how to function out of his newfound element.
Right. And it says a lot, I think, about his personality. Like, he went, you know, he's on, like, his wheelhouse is when he's over there in a suit, like, defusing bombs. That's where he gets his adrenaline from, and he's trying the best that he can, but, you know, it's set, you know, he said he, like, basically got this girl pregnant, and they're doing the best that they think is, you know, what they want, but he's so, like you said, out of his element in that grocery store, not knowing where things are, and, like, it's just a really stark picture of having to be over there and then, like, trying to acclimatize yourself right away, and it's just not possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those where I'm really glad it's in there, but it is a tough watch. Like, it's tough to see the scenes of just the way that he's kind of completely zoned out or just he's just not present. And I think that it's a really important bit of the film. And then, of course, he goes back at the very end and he's back where he wants to be. And it's just like, oh shit. Really, guy? Like, that's where you're. All right. You do you, like, whatever. And so right. I don't know. So I really do enjoy. It's like, I enjoy the film and I think that it's well made, but it's just sort of hard for me to want to watch again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think this is an every couple years maybe rewatch for me because he's not a likable character for me. I think he's kind of a douche. but he has, like, struggles, and it's really, I mean, it's obviously hard to watch people struggle, but that grocery store scene was like, I think it was like on American Sniper, the same thing happened. Like, you come back and people don't expect you to just, like, fit back in, but they're like, come have a beer and come do this. And, like, sometimes it's just not possible. There has to be, like, some sort of period where you can even try to figure out to get your shit together. And some people don't. And that's, like, just really a huge thing to deal with that was captured in this, like, 2-minute scene.
Yeah. And this is a joke, so no one take offense. And to a much lesser degree, this is what I feel like my Saturdays are like. I'm like, okay, I made it through. No. This is my Saturdays by myself after dealing with school for a week. I'm like, everyone leave me alone. I want to just be me. And, you know, I don't want to deal with going to the grocery store because I'm not going to enjoy it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Don't make me go do the things. Just let me be alone for a little bit and then I'll be fine.
And no pants, right?
Well, that's more of a you thing than it is for me.
That is 100% amazing.
I know it. So let's go through our little checklist here. Did you think that this was something that, obviously, if you weren't super familiar with her before, do you think this was something that was a return of sorts or put her on the map or made you pay attention to her more?
I think so. Because of this movie, I knew her name. So, I mean, she did something right.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. I mean, it's tough to ignore. Yeah, I sort of knew who it was, and I knew I had seen some of her films, but I didn't realize it was her. And then when she did this, it was like, oh, what's she doing next? And then she did Zero Dark Thirty, and it's like, oh, holy shit, she's taking, like, some serious subject matter. Like, this has obviously struck a chord with her.
And yeah,
she's like a filmmaker that you need to pay attention to now. Let's see. What was your favorite moment of this film with not a ton of favorite moments?
When Guy Pearce dies? No. I don't think it was my favorite, but my most memorable is when, like, and it's something that stuck with me since the 2009 viewing, is that, like you said, that web of bombs, mm-hmm. when he pulls them up and they all come up together and you're like, oh shit. Like, that for me was, I guess, like, a memorable moment.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, because we already saw what would happen with one.
Yeah.
And then he pulls up this web of five, and I definitely had the, oh my god, like, the sort of recoil and the, oh no, sort of.
He's in the middle of it, you know, mm-hmm. like, he's in the middle of all of those.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I would say my other favorite moment is when we see him struggle for the first time, when he's unsure of himself with the boy. And it's also, I'm going to skip ahead. This is also my most cringeworthy moment, because we find this body and he's digging through his body to try to find these bombs.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm, like, you know, squirming around a little bit. And it's the first time that we see him say, hey, that he's going to blow this up, and then he's not going to, and then he is, and then he isn't, and he kind of goes back and forth. And it's the only time in the film where he's really unsure of himself.
Yeah.
And that is a good moment for me because it adds a lot of humanity to him, but it's also a tough scene for me to watch.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
What about your favorite character? Who did you like watching?
I thought that, I don't know if he's my favorite, but I think Anthony Mackie was kind of the voice of reason. And then he did, like, I was going to say, like, one of my other cringeworthy scenes was, like, when they're trying to do that wrestling and they fight and it goes too far and it gets, like, super awkward.
Oh, and he, like, starts riding him?
Yeah, and,
that
like,
was
just, like,
really weird.
Yeah. Well, and he, like, they were just, like, play fighting, which, first of all, I don't really understand anyway, but, like, then he's like, okay, we're done, and he was, like, not done. But I think that he was, like, the straight guy, the one that's, like, this is how we do stuff, and he had to adapt. Like, he tried the this is not how we do things, and then he was like, okay, let's do it your way, and he was always kind of that adaptable character that's like, okay, well, I guess my new job is to just keep you alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's my favorite character, too, and it's weird because he's the straight man in the film,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's not often where the straight man is the guy that ends up being your favorite. Usually it's the person that has all the personality associated
yeah.
with him, but I do really like his character, and I love the little bit toward the end where he is, I believe it's when he's still drunk, but he says, do you think I have what it takes? And he's talking about to put on that suit.
Yeah.
And I liked that because, again, that's the one little bit where we see that he may come across like he has everything all figured out, but he still has a lot of self-doubt as well.
Sure,
so I really like him. The guy that you would like to die in a fire.
I mean, it literally happened. That Guy Pierce died in a fire.
That's true. That is true. Guy Pierce. That's what you're going to go with is Guy Pierce?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, the main character, Jack, he bugs me, but, like, I wouldn't, not to the point where, like, I hate him. It's just, like, he's really hard to wrap your head around because he has so many layers bubbling underneath a very pretend, confident,
mm-hmm.
douchey exterior. And so, like, I you want him to succeed and you want him to do well, but at the same time, you want him to just chill out for a little bit. So I wouldn't say it would be him. There wasn't anyone in this movie that I really hated. There yeah. were just some characters that I was like, oh, God. So, I don't know. Nobody.
Yeah, nobody in this one. I would say that if it would be anyone, it would be Jeremy Renner's character for me. Just because,
yeah.
and it would only be during certain times. So, I think I'm kind of like, you know, half in and half out there. But it's only when he's, you know, it's when they're play fighting and he's like riding him like a horse. And he's got the knife and he's, you know, trying to get him to cut him and all that kind of stuff. Or I'm like, geez, fuck this guy.
Right. And, like, why?
Yeah. And it's just when he has the real macho sort of BS that I just don't buy into whatsoever. That's when I'm like, all right, I've had enough of this guy.
Yeah.
I'm ready for him to cut the wrong wire, you know?
Right. Die in a fire. Yeah.
Yeah. Look at that little rhyme. How about what did you think about the writing in this film?
I thought it was good. It's hard to get sometimes believable writing in war movies, and there wasn't a time where I was like, oh, that doesn't sound like it would be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it was like in character with what everybody, I think, how everyone would talk.
Yeah, I think that we had sort of already discussed this in that the characters have more depth than I would expect, because we talked about
yeah.
how they have, you know, self-confidence issues, or they seem like they have it figured out, but they don't really, and all that kind of thing. And I think that is, you know, while it may be believable and you're just writing from real life, that's something that not all war films have. And I think that's a nice little nod to the writer there that he did a good job.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay. So one of the things that all war films need to rely on is their costume design, the set design. Could you feel like you were in the middle of a war while you were watching this film?
Yeah, I think, you know, and it said, like, in the heat of conflict, I didn't really, you know, it wasn't conflict like you see in, like, World War II, because obviously they're different. So there wasn't, like, big battle scenes. But as far as, like, set design and things like that, yeah, I felt like, you know, I was in the middle of the desert, or I was in the middle of a town, or I thought that it was pretty believable for me.
Yeah, and part of it is, you know, part of the expense is this was filmed in Jordan, which is, according to IMDb, because that shows my ignorance of the Middle East, but it said that it's a very, very secure area to where the actors didn't need bodyguards or anything like that. And so when everything's set on a location and you're just filming it there, you know, the set design is going to be wonderful because it's not just on a soundstage somewhere. And,
right, right.
And, you know, everyone's wearing military uniforms and everyone's wearing everything that they should be. So I guess I don't have any problem with that. And it just, especially when they were out in the dunes and you have just the way that everyone looked, what they're being so damn hot and the cracked lips and all of that. And they were just waiting there forever. And then there is no climax. It's, yeah, I think the people in there are dead.
Right.
You know, and they're waiting forever. And I was like, oh my God, like that's such a military thing. I felt like, because it's a little bit like the film Jarhead where, you know, you're expecting this movie to be about all of these battles and stuff. And it's really just about these guys just sitting around all the time and doing nothing, just waiting.
Yeah. And like the mental aspects basically of it. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. So that's good. So out of five, Mrs. Zelag, what would you give this film?
I would say like a 3.5. I know that's shitty, but it's not my cup of tea. And I would watch it maybe if it was on, but I'm not going to go buy it and tell everybody to watch it, I guess.
this is funny because I think this is one of our few disagreements, even though we both are kind of on the same page of the film, is I own this movie. I bought the movie. It's something that, like you, it is probably an every 2 to 3 year kind of a watch, though.
Yeah.
So I think that people should see it. I think that it is... to that level of a film, I do think that I would recommend if people are interested in this genre that they should see this one in particular. But it's so I guess I would rate it a 5 because I own it and because I will watch it again. But it is just a tough subject for me to be interested in watching frequently, I guess. It's like one of those I have and I'm like, oh, have you seen this? You should watch that, given the right company, but it's not something that I'm like, hey mom, you have a free Saturday, you should watch The Hurt Locker and feel terrible about the state of, you know, the Middle East.
Right. I think that's like with a lot of thinker pieces, like the movies that make you uncomfortable or the movies that make you think a little bit, are good to watch, but not easy to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, well, let's move on to our second film. It's slightly different.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's a little bit different of a film. It's from the next year. It's from 2009, and it is Sherlock Holmes.
I have a request. Someone I want to see. Sherlock Holmes. You and I are bound together on a journey that will twist the very fabric of nature. Allow me to enlighten you. Tomorrow the world as you know it will end.
Well,
there isn't any time to waste then, is there?
It does make a considerable difference to me, having someone with me on whom I can thoroughly rely.
It was nice to see you, Watson.
Lord Blackwood.
The witness stated that he saw Lord Blackwood rise from the grave.
Gonna raise a force that will alter the course of the world.
He's just as brilliant as you are, and infinitely more devious.
We'll see about that.
Nice touch.
I was simply studying your methods. Should the authorities ask me to hunt you down?
Holmes, leave the case alone.
Case for your good. Save your bullets, Watson.
What was that about saving bullets?
First point of attack, right ear. Two, throat. Three, cracked ribs. In summary, neutralized.
You never complained about my methods before?
I never complain. When do I complain about you practicing the violin at 3 a.m? Your general lack of hygiene or your experiment on my dog?
Just kill the dog. Again.
I wanted to change the world, but I'll settle for ending yours.
I wish you would.
Get that out of my face.
It's not in your face, it's in my hand.
Get what's in your hand out of my face.
They've been flirting like this for hours.
Are we in trouble?
You have the grand gift of silence. Makes you quite invaluable as a companion. Ah!
With the arrest of Lord Blackwood, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. John Watson believe they have stopped one of London's most dangerous killers, responsible for 5 deaths and about to commit a 6th when he's apprehended. Several months later, he's hanged for his crimes, but rumors begin to circulate that he is in fact still alive, having used and the black art magic and the black arts to escape society's judgment. When they disinter his remains, I didn't know that's what you say there, they find the body of another man in the coffin. Soon all of London is a-twitter with the news that Blackwood has risen from the dead, and for some, he's a devil incarnate. With the assistance of the very capable Irene Adler, Holmes and Watson must stop Blackwood before he can initiate his master plan to take over the British Parliament and eventually world domination. Wow, someone uses large words.
Uh-huh. So, this is Sherlock Holmes, 2009. We're talking about Robert Downey Jr. And before we get...
RDJ.
RDJ, one of Rachel's favorites. And before we get into the film itself, I want to talk about why we're talking about this movie. So, we had Robert Downey Jr., famous guy, big time in the mid to late 80s. And... had his drug issues, yes?
Yeah.
And he sort of made his big comeback, I would say, in 2008 with Iron Man. Right?
Seems fair.
But Iron Man, we've already discussed. He's around this time also, he was in Zodiac, which is a movie that you can hear me talk about with Sean Stenglen in a couple of weeks. And he was in Charlie Bartlett. He was in Tropic Thunder. He was in The Soloist. These are all right around this time, right? These are all within two years. And then he was in Sherlock Holmes. And so we selected this one. And part of it is because I'd never seen the film. And part of it is because Rachel loves Robert Downey Jr. And we had at one point had... planned a discussion where it was going to be the two Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movies, and we're going to compare and contrast them with the Sherlock BBC TV series.
With Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah. Yep. And I still have yet to see more than 2 episodes of Sherlock.
Oh.
Because I am just terrible with TV, as we're establishing.
Right.
So we ended up going with Sherlock Holmes, even though we could have gone with... You know, we could have talked again, I guess, about Iron Man, but I don't know what else there really is to say. But this was kind of the film that was like, oh, that wasn't just a one-off. Like, he's actually going to be a big deal now.
Yeah, and I mean, like, as far as the comeback goes, like, I don't know what his, you know, how his timeline went. I know that, like we said, there was some drug addiction and why he decided to come back at that time, but... Like, I appreciate the fact that people were still, like, willing to give him a chance. Like, I think he's a good actor. And so I think that he had a lot to bring to the movies, and that I liked that people were like, you know what, let's cast him. Let's not just, like, write him off. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, it's like an awesome little second chance. He made the most of it.
Feel like, when I'm watching Iron Man, I feel like that's just Robert Downey Jr. being himself.
100% agree.
Do you feel that way when you're watching Sherlock Holmes?
Little bit more British, a little bit more MacGyver. But the sassiness and the attitude, I feel like, yeah.
I think it's basically
British Iron Man.
Yeah. I think that it is smart that he's... You're watching it and you're like, oh, this is a movie star being someone else. You know, it's not like, oh, he's so... he's dug himself into this character and it's Daniel Day-Lewis style to where
right,
he's...
method acting. Yeah.
It's not like that. It's just like, oh, here's Robert Downey Jr. and he's doing his Robert Downey Jr. things just in a different film.
Sure. And I think he's perfectly fine with that because I think I obviously am not alone in saying that his sassy attitude is like something that a lot of people enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he doesn't have to be a different person, really.
Sure. So why don't you tell me why this movie and what you think of it and that sort of thing?
Okay. Well, I like Sherlock Holmes, just in general as a character. So like I've seen all of the British Sherlock Holmes and, I haven't read any of the books, which, you know, that's probably a bad thing, but, like Great Mouse Detective was one of my favorite movies when I was younger. I'm just saying, I'm gonna throw that out there. And we actually had a Sherlock Holmes board game when we were little, and it's called 221B Baker Street, and we used to play it all the time. So like to this day, if I called my sister right now and told her the game is afoot, she would know exactly what I'm talking about. So nice. Like, he's been like a fun character for us, and I mean, you know, it's not a surprise if you know me, like murder mysteries are like one of my favorite genres to read or to watch. Just being able to watch people smarter than me figure out things, for some reason is exciting for me. Mm-hmm. And so I've always liked the Sherlock Holmes character. And then when I saw that this movie was coming out and that Robert Downey Jr. was going to be the Sherlock Holmes, I was just like, well, that makes sense in my heart. So, and I like the way that the movie goes, you know, when they do the breakdowns of the thought process,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, and, they're just like saying this was going to happen and then it happens. And, I like that he doesn't like give all the clues away. It's not like, oh, look at this. This is a piece to the puzzle. Like, because they're keeping you in the dark. It's not spoon fed to you. So you're still trying to figure out what's going on, for me at least, the first time I watched it to the very end. Cause you're like, seriously, how did he break through that stone? You know, like there were things that they don't tell you, they don't spoon feed you that you try to figure out. So, anytime there's a fun character and a problem that I haven't immediately solved that I'm still working on until the end, those two are like basically a recipe for something that I'm going to want to like watch or read.
All right. This was one that I hadn't seen, like I just said, and there wasn't any real particular reason. Like I'm a fan enough of Sherlock Holmes and, you know, I've had some of the kids read some of the stories, and the stories themselves are, the ones that I picked are kind of dry.
Okay. Like
they're not super enthralling, I guess, for me. Like maybe I'm not picking the right ones, but it is a little bit of, and then I thought, and then obviously it's this, and
right.
Oh, and detective, it's blah, blah, blah. I think it's more, it's definitely, I like the way that Guy Ritchie, used the visuals when we were shown those fight sequences and here's what I'm going to do. Right. And then when he would execute them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that that was really clever. I liked the fact that while he was someone that had some sort of, physicality to him, it wasn't like he was a superhero really.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like he was still a guy. He was still just a guy. I kind of liked that.
Sometimes the Holmes character is very, not very, but like this one was a little more, like physical, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes Sherlock Holmes in whatever, you know, variants doesn't do a lot of the physical fighting himself. And I thought that this worked out well that he, you know, was a fighter.
What did you think of Jude Law?
I am okay with their bromance.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that they worked well together. Jude Law obviously is the straight man in this. And I liked that he was sick of his shit. You know, he's not necessarily a likable character, Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
And Watson is the one that has to put up with him all the time and deal with him and kind of knows the ins and outs. They're like a really old married couple kind of. Love that he punched him in the face. I just thought the banter between them was pretty good.
Yeah, I did like that as well. I like the fact that we come to the relationship at the sort of tail end of it.
Yeah.
As opposed to so many movies you see, it's the origin story, how they got together, their first mission, how, you know, figuring out what they're good at. This was like, no. They've been doing this for a while. And they know what they're doing. They know how to work well with each other, but they are also kind of sick of each other.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of a nice take on it. I really also appreciated the way that his perceptions were dealt with, I guess, talking about Sherlock Holmes himself. I think that how I just mentioned earlier that he wasn't a superhero, the way that he would observe things was almost like him being a superhero.
Yeah.
To where, you know, he couldn't really turn that off.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like a burden to him, and I really liked that aspect of it.
Yeah, and it's a burden to other people. Mm-hmm. Like when the fiance is like, do me, and Watson is like, don't do it. Because he's socially inept to the point where he doesn't know sometimes when to filter.
Yeah, it's almost like he's on the spectrum.
Yeah.
To where he just doesn't have the social cues that you would imagine most people would have.
Right.
And so I thought that was interesting. I did like, once we got into some of the fights where it was the humongous dude that he was fighting, and we had with the ship and the special effects and all that kind of stuff, I liked that seemed a little silly.
Yeah.
Just because it kept me in the sort of realm of like an adventure sort of film.
To Agreed. Where
it wasn't like The Hurt Locker. It wasn't supposed to be so realistic. And so I was like, oh, this is just, you know, you can just sit back and watch and it's fun. And you don't have to worry about, oh, well, that doesn't seem realistic to the time or anything like that.
Right. Because just take it for what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, know that you're in like a fun,
Yeah. So I quite enjoyed it. I haven't seen the second one, yet. It is up on my queue. One of the other things that I thought was interesting, but I don't know if I liked it as much, was the Rachel McAdams character.
So what didn't you like?
I don't know. I feel like the love interest is sometimes just put in a movie just to have a love interest.
Put a chick in there?
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, we got to have a woman in here. Who do we have under contract? Oh, Rachel McAdams, she'd be good. You know, and it's like, well, sure. I mean, she was, you know, she did a fine job. I just didn't understand really why the film needed her in there also, I guess. I don't know. It just seemed like she came on the screen and I was just kind of like, oh, okay. Like, it was going along just fine without her, I felt like. I don't know.
I get what you're saying. Like, how much value did it really add? Did that plot line really add? I mean, like, she, actually, to be fair, she kind of moves into the second movie. So the guy that she's working for is in the second movie.
Oh, the Moriarty stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked that they didn't try to make her be British.
Yeah, really.
We've been hot and cold with accents at times, and I like that they were just like, guess what? Just talk like a normal person.
It was funny also that Robert Downey Jr., he was like sometimes British and sometimes he would just whisper.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
If I just whisper, that'll make me sound British, right?
Maybe. Super, super proper. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm okay. I think we're on the same page. I wasn't, like, entirely sure it was super necessary. It did show a side of weakness for Sherlock Holmes. Like, sure. He can't, like, you know, there's that. And then I'm a fan enough of Rachel McAdams that the fact that she was in there didn't annoy me. It wasn't like they tried to put Cameron Diaz in here, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? So she did okay. But I think that I don't know about you, but I'm on the same page that the back and forth between Sherlock and John Watson was probably my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
they're talking about the waistcoat that he needs to give back to him, and he's like, I thought we agreed that I could have it.
That's funny that you bring up the jacket, because, let's see, what did I write? With the jacket talk, right? I put, this is how I know Rachel likes this movie.
You wear a jacket.
It says, like, you wear a jacket. I put, you wear a jacket in quotes. This is how I know Rachel likes this movie.
Right? Because he's sassy. And, like, I wrote some quotes down too. You do know what you're drinking is meant for eye surgery. Like, when he's, like, up doing that. And then just the, how he tries to get, like, he tries to get the gypsy woman to tell him not to marry her. And he's trying to undermine him. And he's like, no girl wants to marry a doctor who can't even tell if a man's dead or not. Like, just the lines where he's like, I can't believe you, you know, like, don't, you know, but he's just, he's, it's kind of, you know, ironically enough, the same character as the Hurt Locker guy, where he has all of these layers. Like, he doesn't want his friend to leave. He wants to keep him around, but he doesn't want to show it. He tries to do it strategically other ways.
Yeah, that's really funny that you mentioned that, because I was just thinking about that, where he, to where they're similar, to where they're just going to kind of do their own thing and they're a little dickish. But when I watch this, I feel like, and I don't know if it's because of the actors, but I feel like, oh, well, he's really a good guy. He's just being a dick because of this, this, this. To where when I watch Jeremy Renner, I'm like, no, he's just an asshole, like, always.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I know, like, Sherlock Holmes doesn't intentionally put people in harm's way. Mm-hmm. And he, I feel like we said, maybe he doesn't have, well, maybe Jeremy Renner, you know, his character doesn't have the social skills either. I don't know what the difference is. Maybe because this guy is, like, solving crime. I don't know what the difference is either. It's very.
And I guess I don't watch the Avengers movies and see Jeremy Renner and think that he's a good guy in there either. Maybe I just don't like him. Maybe I just, like, think that he's a dick.
I like him in the Avengers movies. I actually said it was the Hurt Locker Nighthawk origin story, but I don't think it is.
Oh, right. Because it was him and Anthony Mackie, because Anthony Mackie plays Falcon, and then Guy Pearce plays the bad guy in Iron Man 3.
Right.
So it's like a whole Avengers, like, prequel kind of a thing.
Right. Being a superhero is a new thing.
But, yeah, I guess.
That's basically the long and short of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, I know. It's like there's not really too much to say about it, because it is sort of your popcorn, you know, your popcorn action movie, and it's an adventure movie. Like we had mentioned, it's directed by Guy Pearce, or by, Jesus, I'm just going to keep getting them mixed up. It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did Snatch and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and, you know, he did do the sequel as well. He's also got King Arthur that's coming out this year.
Yes. Oh my God.
Which I'm excited to see too, even though it does have, Jax. Jax. Yeah.
I'm excited to see him without a shirt off too.
Well, and I'm pretty sure, I don't know if
is
that's
that what you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was saying something like that. I don't know. Maybe I.
Yeah, yeah.
It must have cut out. I think I said that.
Oh, did you? And I think they're, Sherlock Holmes 3 is in production.
Yeah, it just says rumored on the on IMDb. So yeah. I don't know that it's for sure, but it has been rumored anyway.
In development, sorry.
Yeah. So this is a film that I was glad I finally got around to seeing. It was one that I enjoyed. I didn't really think I was going to dislike it, but you know, there's a fine line between, oh, am I really enjoying it, or is it just like, whatever?
Sure, yeah.
But no, so I thought it was good. So is this sort of time frame, I think this is like our easiest, did they successfully return, this sort of time frame with Robert Downey Jr. coming sort of back into, you know, the limelight, or into the spotlight, I guess it would be, because you had Iron Man, you had this, and you had all the other movies that we had mentioned already, like Tropic Thunder. So I would say that he pretty successfully made a comeback into Hollywood, wouldn't you think?
Agreed, yeah.
What are you going with for your favorite moment?
I really like the scene where, like, Irene leaves, and then you see the homeless guy at the carriage, and then they fast forward back to, like, all of the crazy shit that he did within that 10 minutes to get to that place.
Yeah, that is good. That is good, because I saw it and I was like, oh, that's probably him.
Right.
But then it's one thing, because most films would just say, oh yeah, that was him, and it would just like show, you know, a different angle and it zooms in on his face and you can see that it's him.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that they did take the time where it's like, no, this is a regular dude having to do all of this stuff in order to get the clue and get to see where she is and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like that. I would say that my favorite moment, I guess it's a series of moments where I really enjoy the sort of, I don't know if I want to call it cinematography, but I like the way that that guy Richie chooses to slow everything down when he's thinking and then slow things down, like when the bomb was going off and it looked like Watson was caught in it. And
yeah.
Then that kind of thing. Like
That's what Gangs of New York should have been, but.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess I enjoy that in both of these films, the way that they were slowing down time and highlighting certain areas.
Yep, totally agree.
Both of them do the same sort of thing, I guess.
Yep.
Who is your least favorite person, or your least favorite moment, I should say?
I mean, like, honestly, I was kind of bored when, like, Lord Blackwood was there. I know it was all about him. But, like, the scenes where he's, like, having all those guys drink from the cup and, like, his dumb plans about world domination, like, they weren't cringeworthy, but, like, they were probably the most boring parts to me.
Yeah, I'm with you there, too, because I saw that and was like, okay, I can probably go do a few dishes and just kind of glance over and, you know, because it's like, well, he's just telling people about his evil plan and I get it.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably my same thing. It's not something that was bad, and I get why it has to be there, but it's just, you're like, all right, whatever, just shorten this up and move on.
Yep.
Favorite character, is it Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah.
I would say so, too. I kind of want to be a contrarian and just say Jude Law.
Right.
But he's not as fun. Like, he's still, and what's nice is that he's got a little Jude Law to him. To where he's not like, he's boring.
Right, he's spunky. He has some witty quips.
Yeah, but yeah. It is Robert Downey Jr. I mean, that's the whole point of the film.
Right.
The person you want to die in a fire, is there anybody that really annoyed you in this movie?
Not really. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
I don't know that I have one for this one either. Cause I thought Mark Strong was fine.
Yeah, I agree.
And I liked the detective. I thought he was good. And
oh, the police guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was fun too, that they work. I like that they work with the police even though they tell them that they're idiots. Like, sometimes you get that where you have like a detective and they're like, we can't even trust the police because they're all horrible. You know, like what I mean? Like, the police aren't doing their job, but like they worked with them and I liked that too.
Yeah. What did you think of the actual script and the story and that kind of thing?
I liked it a lot. It was a really just kind of old school riddle and mystery. And I read those Alan Bradley, Flavia Deluce novels, and that's like British too. And it reminded me of that. Just like set up the problem that needs to be solved and then take us through it. And I like the time of it too, the location and things like that.
Yeah, I think it was a good mystery because it wasn't something that you had all of the plans figured out as the audience.
Yep.
I thought it was just the right amount of you're with him, you're behind what he knows, you're ahead of what he knows, you know, you're all over the place. And I thought that made for a suspenseful kind of an adventure kind of movie.
Yep.
What about a rating? What would you give the rating on this one?
Well, I own it.
Oh.
And I own the second one. So like I said, I've always loved Sherlock Holmes, and Sherlock Holmes plus Robert Downey Jr. I love this movie. I watch it a lot, actually. It's one of my put it on and do things movies.
This is your vacuuming and dishes kind of movie.
Basically. So yeah, I would rate it a 5 just because of who I am as a person.
Sure. I think that makes sense. I'm going to give it a 4. I would think that I really enjoyed it. I think others should see it. I would probably, you know, I would watch it again, like if Anel had interest in watching it. I have the second one coming soon from Netflix, so it's one that, you know, it's one that I'll see, and I don't know that I would go to the theater to see the third one, but I would check out the third one.
Sure, yeah. We didn't talk about the set design, I really like this time period and location. Like, I really love, even like the music at the beginning, the score, And like just the cobbled streets and London and just the time period, I thought really lent itself well to what was going on and how the quote unquote technology worked in this movie.
Yeah, I think that it did do a really good job of putting you in the time.
Yeah.
And I think that can be difficult in a film like this because, you know, obviously it's not like Hurt Locker where you're not filming on location. So in order to have everyone seem like they belong in that time, I think that takes a lot of hard work. And I think that they did a good job of that.
Yep. Agreed.
So, all right. Well, do you have anything else about either one of these films before we move on? Should I watch the sequel? You said you own it.
So, yeah, you can I'm just guessing... come get it.
So that's good too, though. That's got Noomi Rapace in it, I believe.
Yeah, I would say it's a little departure, not a departure. A lot of the same elements are here. The bromance is there. A little bit different of a mystery. I would still obviously I own it, so I would still watch it a lot. But yeah.
And it's got more of the Moriarty type stuff in it?
Yep, it's basically them. And Moriarty, I don't know if you know a lot about Sherlock Holmes. He's like basically his arch nemesis.
I do, yes.
Okay, yeah, so like that kind of comes to fruition in the second movie. So okay. It's pretty good.
Interesting. I do know a lot about it, especially with Anna and I's rewatch of Star Trek The Next Generation, where they ripped off some Sherlock Holmes type stuff for some of those
got
episodes.
It.
So we've been watching that, and I'm like, oh, weird. I forgot that was in here. Anyway, so wrapping us up, if you have any comments for the show or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about or themes that you'd like to put in front of us, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could also follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod. We also have a Facebook page and an Instagram account. You can follow both of those by searching for Plain Label Podcast. And as you may have noticed, we don't really have a sponsor for the show. But if you wanted to help us out, you could support us by heading over to Amazon.com and searching for our wish list called Plain Label Podcast. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with our final episode on comebacks, where we'll be discussing the HBO series True Detective.
Well, in the merry month of May, not from me home I started, left the girls and two were nearly broken hearted, saluted father dear, kissed me darling mother, drank a pint of beer, me grief and tears to smother, then off to reap the corn and leaf where I was born. Got a stout my card, the banished ghost and goblins, a brand new pair of brogues to rock the love of the bogs and frighten all the dogs on the rocky roads. A double of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hunt a hare, a turn and down the rocky roads and all the ways to double and make for all the dogs. In Mullingar that night I rested them so weary, started by daylight, next morning light, and there he took the